Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with a new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, the most recent five are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thanks. Now let's get started. You know, this time we're going to talk about preparation. And we announced the topics a little bit in advance of each show, and there was some discussion about it already, about what kind of preparation. And, well, I suppose there are really three kinds. There is the research, the written type kind of preparation, the actual going through all the information and gathering together all the, well, whatever you need, the facts, the statistics, the opinions from the internet, whatever. And then there is mental preparation, which is, of course, how we visualize what's going to happen, how we think about it, how we play it out in our mind. What is it that's going to take place? What is it would we like? And then, you know, I thought only those two. But then a lot of people, well, some people said, you know, there's another kind of preparation, because Recipe for Peace Now says that we should use food as a tool, and therefore there's the preparation of the convivial atmosphere. And, you know, that's a very good point, too, because that does take some preparation. We have to make something to bring to eat. We have to get together the location and the furniture in the location and the comfort level of it and make sure that everything is there. And that everything is open and available. And, yeah, that's a good point. That's a good preparation point, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what type should we talk about first? Thank you. A lot of you are already here. Thank you very much for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. You know, I think that the vote is to talk about the research preparation first, the gathering of information, the statistical gathering, the internet research, maybe even a scientific research, yes, like a product research, whatever it is that we're doing. So what do we do in order to have that kind of preparation? What do we need to do? What do we need to do to get ready? What do we need to do to prepare? Mm-hmm. And Pearlie and others are saying that you need to thoroughly read everything submitted by all the participants. Yes, very important. Thoroughly read everything submitted by all of the participants. When I am doing an actual mediation and I'm the third party impartial, or even if I'm not formally doing something, I ask the participants, if it's appropriate, to give me a written synopsis of their side, of their issues, of what they think, so that I can see what everybody at least is starting, where they're starting at. And also, you know, that writing something down does indeed help to focus people's opinions. It's good for them, too, is what I'm telling you. Yes, it allows you to really put it down. If you have to write it down, you have to think about it more. And it gets more condensed because you can't just ramble. You have to have something that's intelligent to send in. So I think that writing down, making a position paper, so to speak, is a very important thing, especially if the issues are complex and we have parties who are not exactly in agreement yet. They're negotiating amongst themselves. You know, some groups, of course, when we do especially a workshop or a seminar, there is no contention. There's no issue between them. It's not really a negotiation in that sense because everybody is there for the same purpose. But sometimes that's not true, and people are there for a different purpose, have different opinions, have different concepts of the issues. And an opinion paper is a real interesting thing. It not only helps the person who is doing it or the group, but it helps the leader, which is us, the third party impartial, the mediator, to understand the various issues and the various sides and what they think, at least at the beginning. Yes, sometimes I do. People are asking if I ask for a position paper during the process. I'm going to say what I say, you guys say I say all the time. I'm going to say it depends, because it depends on how complicated the issues are and if they've really changed. You know, we've talked about the process being modified. And sometimes we start out with a goal, but it gets modified or changed due to circumstances that we didn't think about in the beginning. If it's really appropriate and the positions have truly changed because we've had to modify our goals, for example, I might. I don't think it would be unreasonable to ask for a position paper. Just a writing as to what it is that we think and what research, what facts, what stands behind us as a basis for our beliefs. Yeah. You know, we're talking about preparation and the actual preparation of the organization. Karsten says that it's very important to be organized to keep track of all the documents and the emails and the other communications. Yes, it's very important to be organized. Nowadays, it's kind of a little bit easier because a lot of communication is done by computer. Mm-hmm. And we could, of course, make a file of the emails and the attachments and like that. But still, there is oftentimes someone needs to be designated to hold on to the physical papers. Yeah. And to disseminate them, too. Very important. Yeah. Luke says that you need to take careful notes when you have any kind of a meeting. Yeah, so that we all know what was said, and also so that people who weren't actually present can read them and know what was said. It needs to be clear. Mm-hmm. This is a good point. Quite a few people are saying, Arnold and others are saying, that nowadays you take an audio recording of the proceedings, and nobody has to actually physically take notes. Well, nobody uses a pen. Well, not too many. This is a global show, of course, and it depends what you've got. But you can use a pen and paper or a computer to take notes, but an audio recording is, of course, the most transcribable and the most interesting in a way, because you can hear the inflections of the voices and things. Yeah, audio recording. Yes, also a video recording. We know that, this show is, of course, global. I happen to be in the United States, so I need to worry about this. Not every country does. But if you're going to take an audio or a video recording, you cannot use it, for example, on your website, until you ask people's permission for use of their face and voice. Mm-hmm. Okay, people are saying that you can because it's public. I wouldn't. Just ask people's permission. They're usually just fine about it. Not just asked, but get it in writing. Mm-hmm. Caroline and others are mentioning that you could use a designated secretary and participant approval of minutes and notes. Somebody should know that they're responsible for taking the notes, taking the recording, keeping track of documents, keeping track of, keeping track of participants is a real good point. The signing people in and registering them and things, especially if the workshop or seminar, a lot of times Recipe for Peace Now is allowed to give professional credit for attending. A lot of professions in the United States require continuing education to keep up a license, for example. Attorneys have to do it. Continuing legal education, CLE, is required to keep one's license. Courses have a point system, credits, And every couple of years or so, you have to earn so many credits for having taken classes. Yeah. So somebody needs to keep track of that, too. So there should be a designated secretary and participant approval of minutes and notes. You know, in whatever you're doing, the group doesn't necessarily have to have a board with a secretary, but there should be somebody designated to do it. Yeah, somebody who's fairly competent. Mm-hmm. You know, Rourke has made an interesting point, quite a few other people too, that you can take all the notes you want and video recordings and things, but it's the dissemination of materials to everyone before the meeting that counts. Yeah, dissemination of materials to everyone before the meeting so we can all read them. You know, one of the things that is truly distracting and really doesn't add to the quality of the process and will cause people to kind of just wander off is if every time you come, there's just an inundation of written materials, and people just have to sit there with their head down, not participating, kind of taking it all in and flipping through it. No, we'd like it beforehand so that we can truly look at it and truly think about it. Because sometimes the first thought that comes into your head, at least the first thought that comes into my head, is not actually a real practical one. You have to think it through, right? You have to go, well, let's look at this. Let's see where it's sourced from. Good point. Thank you for all of your participation. Where it's sourced from, how old the information is. You have to take a look at all of that and then sit down and have a think as to what it means in relationship to the issues at hand. So, yeah, dissemination ahead of time is a real important thing, especially if there's quite a few pieces of information and it's fairly dense. Good point about calendaring, too. People are saying that the most important item that you can disseminate early is the date so that you know when you're coming and you can calendar it. Everybody's calendar gets filled up. Mine gets really filled up. If you want me to come to something, you got to tell me like 3 weeks in advance at least, and I'll try to work it around it, the next things that come. But you got to tell people. You know, this is a good point that's being made by Adrian and others, that, and thank you for all of your participation, that if it's going to be an ongoing process and we're going to have to meet pretty regularly, you could pick a date like second Tuesday of the month type date and a time so that people know the second Tuesday of the month at 6 o'clock, we're going to be meeting at fill in the blank with this organization. It will indeed help people to schedule. Well, it helps everybody schedule, including the leader, which is us. Laura and others are saying that if you disseminate the materials to everyone and you do it before the meeting, you should have a call for comments. There should be a way for people to email everybody to make comments about what they've just seen, what's been disseminated prior to the meeting, so we can all discuss it. Yeah. You know, a conference call is very nice for that, too, if it can be done. And, you know, nowadays there's those free apps for conference calling. Real nice and easy to do. It doesn't take too much equipment. And it does include those people who really can't physically make the meeting. So call for comments. Beforehand, please. Yes, before the meeting. And, Timothy and others are saying designated person in charge of materials. Yeah, sometimes there's lots of materials. It's really the truth. Even in today's day and age, when most things are by computer, there's still a lot of paper floating around out there. Yes, and of course, exhibits, too. It doesn't have to be paper. Good point. Can be, well, an item, a video, whatever. Yeah, have to hang on to all these things. You know what? I'm going to say, thank you for all of your participation. Quite a few people are sending in, I'm going to call it the manner of preparation presentation. to the group is important. The way you present it is important. And it takes some preparation for all of this because you don't want it to be sloppy. And you don't want it to somehow either be not understood or misunderstood, which is really quite a good deal worse than not understood. So you want to have your preparation as to go into presenting your meeting, to thinking about how it's going to be organized, to presenting your, well, presentation more so goes to a workshop or seminar, which takes a lot of preparation. But see, these, I don't lump these all together into this. How about email attachments? Mm-hmm. Preparation of those so that they go out in a timely manner, and they are, please, neatly done. We're professional people. We're business people. We are people who take pride in our commitments, in our work. And it shouldn't be all full of errors, email attachments. Hard copies are the same. Quite frankly, usually a hard copy is a printer copy of the email attachment, right? So it's the same. And if it's really messy and has typos and things, it's not a good look. PowerPoint. Yes, this is true. People are saying that I never use a PowerPoint presentation. This is true, those of you who have actually seen me in person. It's because, well, I'm a very experienced speaker, so I don't really need to. People use a PowerPoint. Have you noticed this? Remember when people used to have a piece of paper or index cards or something with notes when they went up to talk in front of a group? Mm-hmm. Now everybody just kind of stands in front of the PowerPoint, turns their back to the participants, right, so they could read it, and they read their points off the PowerPoint. This is not a good use of it. And first of all, it's dull. Second of all, it's insulting. We can all read. And PowerPoint on the screen is not a substitution for index cards discreetly on the podium. Just take my word for that. I don't use a PowerPoint because I don't need the index cards. That's the truth, because I've done it so much. And also because I watch the dynamic of the group. I watch the audience. And if you've got a PowerPoint, unless it's really necessary because you've got graphs and charts and stuff that people need to see visually, if it's just a replacement for notes, your PowerPoint, ditch it, because you will get tied to it. It's in front of everybody. They can read the bullet points. You're supposed to go through them. But what if your group leads you in a different direction? They want to know something different. They have asked a really good question. It's not up on the PowerPoint. You see, if you have a serious PowerPoint, it's hard to deviate. I only use a PowerPoint when I need to make a graphic presentation of some sort of statistics or information like that, numbers especially, graphs and studies and things, but not as a substitute for notes, please. Mm-hmm. Flip charts, yeah, I've been known to use a flip chart. Same thing with like a whiteboard, or maybe a blackboard is used nowadays too. Something that you, as the leader, write on to memorialize the various ideas in the room so we can see them, because most people are also visual learners in addition to listening learners, and we can think on them and we can get back to them. Yeah, that's the purpose of something big that you write on, a flip chart, a whiteboard, a chalkboard. Good point. Several people asking what a whiteboard is. It is the equivalent of a blackboard. You know, blackboard, you wrote it with chalk on it, and then you erased it with a chalk eraser, little black felt thing. A whiteboard is the exact same concept, except it's made out of a shiny white substance instead of a black slate. Is that what blackboards are made out of? Yes. And you write on it with a marker, with a colored marker. And then you wipe it clean with just a cloth. But same concept of flip charts to giant pad of paper on an easel is the best way of talking about a flip chart. You just stick this giant pad of paper on a regular artist's easel type thing, and you flip the pages over the back of the easel as you write on them. Then you can tear off the pages and tape them around the room if you so choose. Yeah. So those are good visual aids, and they're good preparation and, good point, good to not only use them to memorialize what people are saying so we can think of all the ideas, but also to use them in advance as preparation. If you're going to do things like flow charts and stuff, you got to use in advance. You got to get it all together. You can't, it's, first of all, it's dull, and second of all, you can't remember all of it on the spur of the moment. You can't make some sort of a complicated flow chart just out of thin air. You should bring it with you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Visual presentation of graphs, and people are talking about preparation of a synopsis of what the various positions are. Maybe. Kind of dangerous to make an actual synopsis of someone else's position, because you might not be certain of the nuances, and they're going to take offense. I do, if I have some sort of a drink, not an alcoholic beverage, but in the States, if you get coffee, it comes in a container, you know, a round container and like that. I think that's a good place to post things because people can see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, posting a synopsis. I like people. It's dangerous to write a synopsis of someone else's position. I like to have them do it themselves. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, let's talk. A lot of people are talking about preparation for future goals, too. Good point. Not just the this is today's thing preparation. Mm-hmm. I got it done. It was a deadline. But also preparation for thinking on future goals. Future. Mm-hmm. Ed and others are making a very good point that if you're going to do such a thing, you have to clearly define your goals. Yeah. You know, people are using the word mission statement. Maybe. Mission statement is kind of more what we're going, well, it is a definition of goals. There's such a thing as a vision statement, too, which is really a goal for the future that you don't actually have a timeline for, because people are saying about timelines to keep track, to keep on track of heading towards your future goal. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a very good point that Jada is making, that being able to visualize a successful outcome encourages enthusiasm. Yes, and if you have enthusiasm, people want to come back. Being able to visualize a successful outcome encourages enthusiasm. Good point. Mm-hmm. I can see that this is what we could do if we all got together and did it. Follow me. Yes, enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. So now we've talked about how to prepare kind of in a practical manner. And Jada's idea about being able to visualize a successful outcome encourages enthusiasm is kind of a nice segue into what type of mental preparation do we need to achieve a successful outcome? What do we have to do mentally to achieve a successful outcome, to lead this group to success? Mm-hmm. Quite a few people are mentioning the word enthusiasm again. Yes, good point. That you want to be enthusiastic. And Stephen is saying that in order to have mental preparation, you must have the certainty that we have done the research and the preparation thoroughly, which gives confidence to lead. Certainty that we have done the research and preparation thoroughly, which gives confidence to lead. Yeah, mental preparation is really the gaining of confidence that you can do it, right? I can handle this. I know what I'm doing. I've researched it and I've read it and I've thought about it. Yeah, mental preparation. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a wonderful statement. Jory says that listening is the most important mental preparation. Listening is the most important mental preparation. Oh, isn't that true? Because you can have an idea of what's going to happen. You can be all mentally prepared, and you can be all, I'm going to call it physically prepared, but really it's the research and the writing and like that. You've gotten all your materials together. You can be the most prepared person in the world, but you need to listen to all sides, because your idea of what will happen will shift. Now, it may not get modified completely, especially if the group is fairly cohesive. It'll shift a little during the process. You got to listen. Listening is truly preparation, right? You've got to be prepared to listen because you've done all the preliminary stuff. How did Jory put it? Listening is the most important mental preparation. Listening is the most important mental preparation. Good point. So how do we, as a practical manner, give ourselves some mental preparation? Now, we know as a practical manner we can gather all the documents and things, but what can we do to really enhance our abilities, to really enhance our preparation? Brody says that you mentally imagine all sides and what their positions might be. Yeah, even, you know, it seems like something that you do at the very beginning because you haven't seen it yet, but you do it all along. You think about why people are doing what they're doing and how it fits in, and how we're going to reach compromise and go forward, right? Mentally imagine all sides and what their positions might be. You ever hear the expression, it's kind of an American idiom, to walk a mile in someone else's shoes? You have to think about what it is that they want, what it is that they would, that they're fighting for. And, yeah, really that's true, too. Thank you for all your participation. You also have to figure out how much they're willing to settle for. Mm-hmm. Because they're thinking about you in the same way. Mm-hmm. Kalei says you need to be willing to change your preconceptions as the process goes forward. Very good point. Be willing to change your preconceptions as the process goes forward. I came in with an idea, well, based on my prior experience, based on a position paper, based on I haven't been to a meeting before. Mm-hmm. I come in with a preconceived notion of some sort. Mm-hmm. And it's important that you recognize that you've done that. And as Kalei says, be willing to change preconceptions as the process goes forward. As we get to know each other as people, as the process goes forward, as we do more towards getting towards our goal, our preconceptions will modify and change. They really will. Mm-hmm. And be open to it. Mm-hmm. Nico says that you need to prepare notes so that you're confident you'll remember all the facts and opinions. Yeah, if there's quite a few of them, you do need to make kind of a, well, it might look even more like a list, your notes, just so you don't forget something, because it's very important. Mm-hmm. Prepare notes so that you're confident that you'll remember all the facts and opinions. Good point. Mm-hmm. Lee and others are saying that you need to practice and visualize responses in different scenarios. Mm-hmm. People play against each other one way or the other, and you think about and practice your responses. Interesting point, people are saying you do it in the mirror. Yeah, then you can see your facial expression too, and you can judge it. It's not just vanity to do that. It's a real practical thought to practice what you're going to say, not memorize it, but practice it in general so that you don't lose your points, so that you don't kind of freeze up when you hit the public, and you can make your points across well and clearly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Practice individualized responses in different situations, scenarios. You know, Colin's making a good point that we're talking about the group as though it is an entity in and of itself, as though it's a person. Legally, it kind of is. It's like a corporation is a person. But in reality, we all know that's not true. So Colin and others are saying that you need to consider individuals, not the group. I would argue, of course, that you need to consider both, because individuals make up the group. Yeah. How are you going to have a group if you don't have a bunch of individuals getting together? Do they really think as one? Hardly ever. Mm-hmm. You got a little bit of dissension in the group? Well, that's what makes it interesting. Mm-hmm. Consider individuals, not the group. You know, Natalie and others are commenting that individuals create the group dynamic. Yeah, the group dynamic, the way it feels when you're there, the way people act towards each other, kind of. It's openly, but kind of subconsciously, because they get it from the atmosphere of the group. And, of course, our groups are going to have a convivial atmosphere because we use that as a tool to keep people in the room, to keep people interested in each other, and to allow... Well, networking is an overused word, but it kind of is. To allow the making of cross-cultural and cross-ideas and make them into one and negotiate them. Yeah. Individuals create the group dynamic. All true. Yeah. So, and preparation, the third kind of preparation that some people are talking about is a very good point. You need to prepare the physical plant where you're going to meet, if you're going to meet in person, and prepare for the potluck. Yeah, you've got to know if there's facilities, you've got to know if they're clean, and you've got to know if they're in working order and things like that. We want to make a convivial atmosphere so everyone is included. I'm not all that big on just changing the furniture around into a circle just because. I think that adults can communicate with each other without actually holding hands in a circle. I really honestly do. If that's your favorite thing to do, then I don't object, I suppose, but I don't think it's necessary. It's a kind of a child game. So, while we are not holding hands, we are holding a plate, right? Because Recipe for Peace Now advocates the creation of a potluck. Everybody brings something, right? Everybody brings something to eat. If you're going to do such a thing, then you must communicate with the other participants any food allergies, any food prohibitions, or any food intolerances, something that some people won't eat among the participants, so that we don't accidentally make somebody sick. Yeah, it's supposed to be a good time. So you need to know and pass along the information about sensitivities. Also, I think that as the leader, usually the host, hostess of the group, I always like to bring a little extra food. I know that that's my personal thing because I hate to run out, but it does make for a rotten party if you're going to run out of food. So I do. I bring some food, and also I bring at least one safe recipe. Now, what on earth is a safe recipe? Well, we've already taken the survey about allergies and prohibitions and religious prohibitions. Mm-hmm. And we've taken the survey. We know if anybody's allergic to anything or they can't eat it. And so the safe recipe does not have any of those things that people are sensitive to. It doesn't have too many ingredients at all, as a matter of fact. And they are ingredients that in my area people would be familiar with. They would have eaten them before. Mm-hmm. So they know if they don't like it or it makes them kind of ill. Right? Right. Safe recipe. Mm-hmm. And on that vein, I don't think I mentioned it this time, and I mention it every time. If you're going to have food, everybody needs to be told to label the food. Not what's it called, meatloaf, but what is in it so I can determine for myself if I can eat it. Yeah, so you need a listing. So here's our safe recipe for today. Actually, last week we ran out of time, which is a very good statement because it means that we had a particularly interesting and lively discussion about a current topic, right? We ran out of time, and I never did get to the adventure recipe. We usually do the safe one first, so we're going to redo that one. This time, did I do the safe recipe? No, I forgot to do the safe recipe because this is a safe recipe. Excuse me. It's the turkey shepherd's pie. Generally speaking, shepherd's pie is ground beef. But, you know, you can make it with pretty much anything as the filling, which is the beauty of it. And it is basically a pot pie with a mashed potato crust. It is unspeakably delicious, I got to tell you. And it is our safe recipe for today. I made a turkey. Now, I'm not big on using saying to use leftovers because I'm afraid that people will leave it out or leave in the refrigerator for a week, and then, ooh, it's just still good. It doesn't seem to have fuzz on it. You know how that mold stuff gets furry. But no, do not feed people leftovers. Do not feed yourself leftovers unless you're absolutely certain that they're not very leftover, as in it didn't take very long, and they are still fresh. Yeah, so be careful. Here's the turkey and mashed potato pie. We're going to preheat our oven to 375. And let's get ourselves a nice baking dish, a nice big one, like a 2-quart. And we're going to grease it because otherwise you get stuff stuck. It's just not as good. So we've got that set aside. Here's our ingredients. We've got 3 tablespoons of butter. Please do not substitute something for the butter. 2 tablespoons of all-purpose flour. We're going to make a roux. A nice big can, like a 16-ounce can of chicken broth. You want to make your own chicken broth. You are a finer person than I am, and yours will be more delicious. But I'm going to use the regular canned stuff. 3 cups of cooked turkey. Did you hear the word cooked? 3 cups of cooked turkey cut into cubes so that it looks nice. 3 cups of mashed potatoes. Yeah, I must confess I probably won't mash it myself either. If you've got those leftovers, particularly nice in this. 4 cups of, did I say 4 cups of mashed potatoes? Hello, 4 cups of mashed potatoes. 3 cups of cooked vegetables. Also, you know the frozen ones are really kind of cooked, right? Right. You can give them a little heating through, especially since they are frozen. If you're going to use frozen, which quite frankly I probably am, you want to, of course, thaw it and pat it dry. So we've got 3 cups of vegetables, mixed vegetables. Actually, those little carrots and peas are kind of nice in this. It's shepherd's pie, right? Yeah. And 4 cups of mashed potatoes that are already made. That can also be a leftover, but not a stale leftover. And give it 3/4 cup of shredded cheese. I prefer the looks of a light-colored cheese. You can do as you please, but I personally prefer mozzarella or parmesan. We've got our preheated oven. We've graced our baking dish. So we're going to melt the butter, nice big saucepan, whisk in the flour. Nice, gets nice and smooth and thickened. And make it real hot. You've got the oil. You've got the little bit of flour in it. Yeah, we've got kind of a roux. It's really, really hot. We're going to reduce the heat, and we're going to stir in the turkey and the chopped and the vegetables. Vegetables come like that. They come kind of cubed, frozen. Turkey is going to be cubed. Everybody remember that the turkey is cooked? Yes, yes. It's cut into cubes. Now, what are you going to do with all those mashed potatoes? Well, the answer is, we need shredded cheese for the top. Otherwise, it won't be yummy and delicious and bubbly. 3/4 cup shredded cheese. The orange type of cheese looks nice. I personally prefer mozzarella or Parmesan. It'll get a little bit of brown around the edges. It'll be just delicious. So we're going to melt our butter. We're going to whisk in the flour because we're making a roux until it's all nice and smooth. We're going to whisk in the chicken broth, the can of chicken broth. You got to actually whisk that continually as you pour in the broth. Otherwise, it won't come out nice. You'll get lumps. We're going to boil it, heat to boiling, reduce the heat. And now we're going to stir in the turkey and the vegetables, all cubed. They're glad to see you. There we go. Now, remember those mashed potatoes that were already prepared and they were kind of leftover? And we've got 4 cups of them. Let's divide them into two. And we're going to go 2 cups of mashed potatoes along the bottom of the pot, of the ceramic baking dish, the glass baking dish, and up against the sides, because what we're doing is we're making a crust, right? Right. So we're going to put that there. Squish them all around. Just use your fingers. We're going to take our mixture with the turkey and the vegetables and like that. Spread it over our mashed potato lower crust now. All spread out, all yummy. Let's put some cheese in it because it melts on the inside. It's delicious. And we're going to now top it with the other mashed potatoes, right? Yeah. Make a crust. All good. The top crust is going to need some browning. We're going to throw most of the cheese on there so that it makes a nice bubbly brown surface. You bake it like that, too. You bake it like half an hour, not longer, because it's already cooked through, and what you're doing is you're browning the cheese and making all the flavors melt. Delicious. Everybody loves it. And it is the safe recipe because it has turkey. And it doesn't have any pork in it, right? Or anything else that's unusual. Safe recipe. Also, before you serve that, you should... Pardon me. Frog in my throat. Hello. Before you serve that, you should let it stand for about 5 minutes because, A, it is incredibly hot and you shouldn't serve anything that people can burn their mouths on, and, B, it will kind of blend together if it stands there for a second. Stick it on a wire rack and for about 5-10 minutes. Make it easier to serve. Yeah. So that is our safe recipe. Let's go on to our adventure recipe. What makes this an adventure recipe? It's the pork and bacon. And if you do not want to have an adventure recipe and you're not sure that your participants are eating pork or bacon, which is probably one step worse than pork in all truth and honesty, leave it out, and then you'll have, well, if you used vegetable broth, you'd have a vegetarian recipe. These are the yummiest little balls. The only caveat is that you need a deep fryer. I personally don't own a deep fryer, but lots of people I know do, and if you're very careful, you can bring it and make these on the spot, which is really kind of cool because they smell lovely and everybody likes to watch something come out of the deep fryer. You fish them out with those big slotted spoons and put them on a towel. It's just yummy. Okay. We're going to make little risotto meatballs stuffed with cheese and sun-dried tomato and bacon. Now, that's a good sentence, isn't it? Yeah. So let's have 4 cups of chicken broth. Chicken stock. The thick stuff, not the broth. Excuse me. 1 tablespoon of olive oil. Give it an ounce or two of butter. Please don't skimp on the butter. And a nice onion that we're going to chop up. Let's get 2 cups of risotto, 1/2 cup of grated Parmesan, 1/2 cup of chopped sun-dried tomatoes. They come either dry in bulk or in those little jars. If you're going to use the little jar, which is quite delicious, remember to pat them dry because they're full of oil. And you know what? We're going to need the cheese filling for the risotto balls. So we're going to take mozzarella cheese and cut it into about 24 cubes. And, well, you know about the deep fryer. You have to fill it so that it can fry things. Fun to do in the room if you can and you have the facilities. Let's boil the stock and then reduce the heat and simmer it. Then we're going to take our oil and our butter. We're going to throw into a saucepan and add the onion. What does it take? 2-3 minutes until it gets golden brown. Reduce the heat, add the rice, and you cook it for about 3 minutes until the rice is nicely golden. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Remember our hot stock over there? Let's pour it in kind of gradually. Because we want the liquid to be resorbed in the risotto, let's face it, it's like rice. In fact, it is rice, isn't it? Yeah. I'm told it's arboreal rice. It is. So what you're doing is you've browned the rice lightly with the onions and the oil. And now we're going to take that hot stock that we boiled and is simmering on the stove, and we're going to kind of ladle it in on top of the rice, on top of the risotto, until all of it is soaked up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absorbed. Yes, absorbed is a nicer word. You are right. Yeah. Until it's been absorbed. Mm-hmm. You keep doing it until you've added all of the stock. If you throw it on all on at once, it won't soak in. It won't absorb properly. It takes about 20 minutes. We're going to stir in the Parmesan. Yeah, because we had a little grated Parmesan. Yeah, we have about a third of a cup grated Parmesan cheese, which makes the risotto really nice. We remove it from the heat. And you know, because we're making balls out of this, little like meatballs, let's let this cool and put it in the refrigerator for an hour or so. This is a good recipe to make the night before, because you can put it in the fridge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you take your rice mixture with the turkey and the vegetables and like that. You stick it in the fridge for not less than an hour. You want it to get pretty refrigerated. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to cut up our cheese. We've cubed it into as many meatballs as we're going to make, because we're going to take a raw meatball. It's been in the fridge, so it's not sticky anymore. And we're going to choose our thumb and make an indentation in it. And we're going to put in a piece of sun-dried tomato, a piece of bacon, not the whole darn thing. You're going to chop the bacon into what I would call a rough chop. Mm-hmm. We're going to stick the bacon in, and we're going to stick the cube of cheese in there. And we're now going to close up the little hole that we've made in our meatball, so to speak, our turkey ball. Give it a nice roll with your wet hands. Voila, you've got a wonderful thing that we are now, well, since it's gotten warm, you probably should put it back in the fridge for about 15 minutes to give it some real gravitas to stay together. We've got it all made. The meatballs are all made. The risotto balls are all made. They're stuffed with cheese and tomato and bacon. Oh, how can this be beat? Time for the deep frying. You get yourself one of those nice deep fryers and a nice wooden spoon with slots, and you put them in a few at a time. They roll around in that little drain thingy that they use, with the filter, little drain thing that's in the deep fryer. And you pull them out with a slotted spoon, stick them on a paper napkin, and you don't serve them too hot because people would burn their mouths. Delicious. No, it doesn't take breading. People are asking about breading on the outside. It'll turn out real, like it's been breaded. It'll turn out real nice and kind of crispy on the outside. It's a real crowd pleaser. You want to make this Nati adventure recipe? Take the pork out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that is our adventure recipe. Very, very nice, very desirable, very delicious. And if you have the facilities, fun to deep fry when you're in the room. People tell me that is not cooking together. I used to call it that. That is watching somebody else cook. But in any event, it's a demonstration, and it's something that we can talk about that doesn't make us mad. All good. So that is our adventure recipe. And I see that we are nearly out of time. Thank you very much for all of your participation. Thank you for calling. If you would like to send us an email or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The last five shows, including this one, just as soon as we get off the air, are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the shows, including the last five, are archived at the radio station at blogtalkradio.com/recipeforpeacenow. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. That was just lovely. Thank you for being with me. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.